Hi, I'm Angela Middleton, MBE, founder of the Limitless Group of Companies, entrepreneur, longevity investor, and mother of two children in their 30s. Known for my work with organisations large and small and with senior government officials, I help leadership teams rediscover their true potential in body, mind and business, upgrade their skills and create a brand new culture of well-being and productivity across their teams. Join me at the I Want to Be A podcast, where in this latest season, I find out from some of the most forward-thinking leaders the wellness solutions they've seen work best in their organisations, how they've increased retention engagement, and what they see as the true path to work-life wellness, longevity, and productivity for all. I've been podcasting now since 2017, 7 years in total, and some of you are long-term listeners, I know, and I'm so grateful for that. I love having your feedback, so do keep it coming. I've got one thing to ask you though, and that is that if you are enjoying it and you haven't already subscribed, please do click on the link and subscribe. I've never looked for sponsors and I really don't intend to, but more subscribers puts us up the ranks, and if we go up the ranks then more people see it, and obviously that's what we want. Now on to today's interview. I mean, let's just fill people in who haven't listened to the first podcast, and tend to get people coming on this series who either it's for their young, you know, their children who are just leaving school and or just leaving university, and the parents and the sometimes the teachers and the child themselves or the young adult, let's say, listen to it and they're thinking about a role. And sometimes you get people who want to do career change, you know, sort of further into their career. There could be any age, really. Older and older it's getting, the more that, you know, people are staying in business longer. Mm. And then they're looking for sort of career change. So it's great now because you're going to have the perspective of sort of, well, a wider perspective. I think you were 29 when we last spoke. And obviously you've done a few more things since then. A little bit of background for those who didn't listen to the first one. When I interviewed you, you were at the beginning of your career really as a fuel scientist for Shell. Mm-hmm. And, you spoke a lot about the various things that you were doing and how you'd moved from sort of lab work onto more management of data and presentations and so on. So tell us what you do now, and then we'll sort of explore how you got there and what the differences are, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose I'm in a unique position, well, not unique position, but interesting one of having a fairly significant career change in terms of the type of work that I'm doing and the type of research that I'm working on while still working for Shell. So nothing's changed from the people who pay me, but and potentially as well, actually, it's still within the same department. But I've done a complete switch to from working on stuff that was very much chemistry based and playing to my background. I studied chemistry at university.
Quite traditional as well.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So working on fuels, additive chemistry, doing research into how engines performed on different fuel formulations, things like that. Now I've moved into electric vehicle charging, e-mobility, and I've now sort of expanded that to a bit more of the engineering side of things. And the sort of career change that Shell has enabled me to do is sort of like, because I'm known within Shell, it's sort of like I got this role not from my engineering capability, should I say. I'm not traditionally trained in engineering. It was more the other skills that I'd picked up during my fuel scientist days around managing of projects, working a lot with third parties, and doing sort of like quite complex programs with a lot of like IP considerations, for example, that then led to, oh, we want someone who has those skills for within the e-mobility space as well. So that was how I made the shift. The expectation was that I'd learn the engineering piece as I was doing the role, sort of thing, rather than it was a prerequisite before I was able to take it. So that's quite cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, what that demonstrates is that, you know, we should always value these transferable skills, things like stakeholder and project management and communication. And they're so called for in practically every field, particularly as you get further up the ladder.
as you have. So it's a great example of that. I suppose as well, your transfer as it's like a sign of the times, really, because when I spoke to you, you were sort of testing which were the best fuels in vehicles, and now you've actually gone the other way and you're actually looking at things that are competitive for fuel.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of in line with Shell's strategy of sort of continuing to work through the energy transition, not wanting to get left behind. But from my own personal interest perspective, this was an area that I always wanted to work in. Found that initially a little bit difficult because of the, I suppose, traditional degree and everything that I'd done. There wasn't as much call for chemists that were working in this space at the time when I joined. But between 2012, when I first joined Shell, and now, everything has completely shifted.
Yeah.
And yeah, there is a much more focus on energy transition topics. And yeah, we've been going from strength to strength. I think when I joined my current team in 2021, there was 8 of us, and now there's 15 just within my small team. So yeah, we've really grown significantly. And we're just one team in Shell. There's a lot more people working on this kind of thing as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wondered about that whole transition. I mean, Shell is obviously a really good example, you know, of a large company where the market, the environmental changes have really impacted the business direction. And so someone sort of wanting to get into your world from a career perspective now, I mean, what would be the different advice? Because I remember before when I was talking to you, and you're talking about chemistry degrees and things of that nature, and you said that you probably were looking back, you may have done some more physics. What would be your advice now, people wanting to get into your world, let's say?
So it's a very interesting question, that, because there's still so many different research topics that one can work on within Shell. So I wouldn't necessarily say people should be studying any differently. From my perspective, studying chemistry was a very broad topic that could have a number of different applications. And there are some members of my team now that are traditional chemists by background that are working on, for example, battery chemistry, that is becoming incredibly in demand the world over. So I wouldn't go so far as saying study something different, but there's a lot more focus in the area that I work in now on engineering. So that sets me at a slight disadvantage in terms of my background, but I think that the ability to learn on the job and be curious and want to pick up these new topics of interest is going to take you a long way still.
I was going to say, if you're bringing new graduates into your world now, what sorts of degrees are they? So I guess you're going to have your fair share with, you know, the traditional sciences, but are there other degrees as well now that they're coming in with?
Interesting that you say. Yeah. So definitely in the past, when I first started, 90% of the graduates in my team were chemistry background. Now we are starting to see a lot more engineers coming through, but also a fair few more computer sciences, people with programming skills, data scientists, that kind of thing. So as we are transferring to a bit more of a digital age, there's just sort of like inherent need for more computational experience and working on modeling and programming and things like that is going to be more useful in the future. It's certainly something that isn't my strong suit. So I've actually got a couple of interns working with me at the moment, working on actual programming and modeling for these things. It's like, do I have the time to learn programming myself? Potentially not. I'll get someone in who can do it for me. I'll provide the background and the context, and they can provide the
knowledge. And what about people sort of later on in their career? Maybe we talked before about something like sales and marketing, where you probably could step into that role more easily than someone could step from there into your role. Do you still think that? Or, I mean, what's your take on that now?
Yeah, I think that's still true. Not to play down anyone's experience in a sales and marketing role now, but definitely it's become more and more important for someone in my position to already be considering what's the direction that Shell's going in has on the work that I'm doing. It's not just a case of we need to research this because it's interesting. Yeah. There needs to be an inherent business value behind it. And we are really starting to have to be a lot more cutthroat about the kind of topics that we're researching. There is a much closer link than I would say 10 years ago when I started to the direction that the business is going. And you always have to be considering what impact does this have on Shell's bottom line. So just it's been weaved into the type of way we're thinking about our projects now. There really does have to be that direct link back. And really as well, there's a lot more close working with the business. I think it was, well, when I first started, the links between my research team and the business was very tightly controlled by a couple of senior members of our team to make sure that the business was getting a consistent message. And we could have tight control over sort of exactly what they needed to know and not a ton more. Now that's shifted a bit, so there's a lot more openness speaking with, well, from myself, working directly with members of the business, so working with sponsors and things like that, which for me gives me a lot more understanding of exactly what's causing the headaches for the people that sponsor my projects. But likewise, they get a good understanding of actually how much effort it takes to actually provide the answers that they want.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like this research area now is a lot more integrated with both the finance and the sales and marketing areas. So it's not such a silo. You know, traditionally we saw scientists and researchers in lab coats sort of locked away. It sounds like it's a lot more part of the integral part of the business now.
Yeah, definitely. And to a certain extent, that's down to the speed in which that we're traveling. In the past, we've got a very set product refresh cycle for our traditional fuels. So every 4 years, we'll be launching a new product. And once you've launched, you start back at the beginning, you have another 4 years to launch the next one. One of the projects that I started working on not long after moving into this team, they wanted to launch within the next year. So it cut the development time drastically. But that was just the speed at which everything needed to happen. It's like we've deployed some assets and they're not working quite as well as we wanted. We need a solution. We need it yesterday. Come along, work with us, and we'll come up with a solution. But yeah, we need it all tested and things within 6 months so that we can roll it out to all of the markets next June, that kind of thing. So,
and I guess there must be quite a big demand for confidentiality as well in your role, and making sure that I don't know how you can maintain much of a competitive edge working in a company where it's mainly a commodity, but I guess there must be some aspect of that, is there?
Yeah, certainly. It depends very much as who you're working with and what you're working on. But absolutely, there needs to be a lot of trade secrets and us protecting our own IP. It was more of a thing, certainly, in my old role, because there would be a lot more sort of formulation type of things that were bespoke to Shell. Now we are definitely working a lot more with sort of publicly available assets, should I say. But yeah, there will still be, and Shell's still very focused on what can give us a competitive advantage, what makes our offering differentiated against competitors. Mm-hmm. But the game's completely shifted. So now competitive advantage would be our chargers work when you pull up to them and start to charge. that's a big challenge at the moment.
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, I was just thinking that as you were speaking, that there must be a big team deployed in the actual logistics of getting this energy out, because I've read somewhere in a little while ago, and I don't have the detail, but I do remember reading somewhere that there just was not ever going to be enough chargers to basically support all the electric vehicles that were planned. So there was a complete mismatch in the logistics. Is that something that you guys get involved in as well?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I haven't even really started talking about one of my main topic areas, which is electrification of heavy duty trucks and things like that. So if you consider that average family car maybe has a battery capacity of, pulling some numbers off the top of my head, maybe 80 kilowatt hours. In the future, if we want to electrify a truck, then you'd need a battery that's 600 kilowatt hours and significantly more power to charge that in a reasonable amount of time so that the truck can continue on its journey. So there will always be this challenge of the infrastructure trying to keep up with the number of vehicles out on the road. And that is no small task at all. It's going to require a complete shift in the entire industry, all the way down to the amount of grid infrastructure to actually get the electricity to the sites that then need to provide it to vehicles. Yeah. So it's a very interesting challenge, and not one that's going to be solved within the next couple of years. That's what says.
Definitely longevity in that this particular sector for sure. So tell us a bit about sort of your everyday, your normal day, if there is a normal day. This working for a large company like Shell, loads of stakeholders, you know, although you're working in quite a specialist area. Because people often, one of the questions is, you know, what is it they want to do? But secondly, it's what type of company do they want to work for? A large company, a small company, or even independently on their own as a consultant. So tell us a bit about the pros and cons of a large company.
Yeah, really interesting question. So I'm based in London. I'm based in the centre of London. The Shell Centre building's right behind the London Eye. Right up front and centre in the London skyline. But a lot of my colleagues, including my line manager, are based out in Germany, where we have a testing site. So we have more of the lab-based activities there. And for my role now, there's a huge number of chargers that we have on that site that we're doing lots of different testing on. One of my projects is testing the latest battery electric trucks that are going to be released into the market. So a typical day for me, based in London, is always on the phone with the guys over in Germany, trying to organize the next testing campaign that we're doing. And a lot of remote working to make sure that everyone's on the same page, planning what we'll be doing in March and April sort of time. We've got a team that's truly global. So we've got members based in the US, based in Shanghai, the majority of our team based in Germany, and then a number of us in London as well. So it very much is a remote working kind of environment. Even if I am office based here in London, the majority of my team get together regularly on teleconference calls and keep up to date with what everybody's working on.
Do you work from home at all, or is it all in the office now?
Me personally, I prefer to work from the office, just to separate home life from work life. Certainly during the pandemic, it took a little bit of time to get used to working from home all of the time.
Did research and lab work stop then, or were there still people in labs?
We did a very, very good job of keeping everything up and running as much as possible. So none of the work actually stopped. But what we did do in Germany was half the number of people in the lab and run two shifts. So half of the team were working from home at any one time, and the other half were in the office. So that then meant that we could still continue running with fewer people around, so that there is less chance of anybody catching COVID. And the testing still continued as normal. So that was really fantastic. But anybody that was supposed to be working in an office environment, they were working from home 100% of the time. And that continued for the best part of a couple of years. Yeah.
So you're working for, like I say, in this large environment now. So you primarily work in the office. And so what's that like, you know, culturally, what's that like? I mean, do you mix with people from all different departments? Do they have like a central lunch place? I mean, just give people a bit of a flavor of the culture when you work for a large company like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny you should ask. So yeah, we've got a pretty large office, 22 floors or something. I'm on the 20th, so fantastic views and everything. We've got our own centralized canteen where we see everybody. And that's usually where we end up bumping into people from different teams that are all going to lunch at the same time. For such a large office, it's quite surprising to me that you don't usually see people from other departments that often, because you have to leave your floor to actually go and bump into them.
Yeah.
But especially after COVID and a lot of people working from home more often, things, it's not the case that you could guarantee to see someone in the office on any particular day and bump into them. So you have to be a lot more organized to make sure that there is this organization of, we're going to be in the office on Tuesday, come down to our floor, and you can catch up with a number of people all at once rather than sort of drip feeding that throughout the course of a couple of weeks sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that has certainly been a change that has take some time to get used to, because it used to be the case that everybody was in the office all the time and you could guarantee that on any couple of days there'll be an opportunity for you to see everybody once sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, I used to work for BP Oil. You know, my first job was with BP Oil, and the first 10 years, and we used to have a canteen. They used to charge 5p for a 3-course lunch. And it was just some sort of weird thing, some sort of tax thing. So we'd all get together, and it was really good socially, but it really meant that I think a lot of business got done there. I mean, I was only a new young graduate at that point, but people would sit and there'd be a lot of meetings that would take place there. That's the sort of stuff that you miss, I think, when you're working remotely, these sort of accidental meetings, chats, which can really send things, you know, just spark off new ideas and send people in different directions. I think that's a big benefit of working for large organizations as well.
That's something that I try to make sure that I do when I travel to Germany, for example. Usually I'm there for a particular reason. There's a particular test running or something like that. But at least one day during that trip, I will try to make sure that there's no real meetings, because you end up just wandering around and catching up with people that you haven't seen in 6 months to a year sort of thing. So having that flexibility to just say, yes, I do have 5 minutes for a coffee and a catch up with whoever you end up bumping into is really valuable. Because you could literally turn up to Hamburg and spend the entire time just locked in a meeting room and not see anyone.
Yeah, it's very useful. I think this whole thing of networking, we saw the value of it even more so when we weren't able to do it. It leads me to sort of another question about attributes for success. When I spoke to you before and I asked you what the attributes were for success, I don't know if you remember what you said, but I'd love to hear now what you think they are, and maybe even how you think you've changed in the last 6-7 years from a business perspective. What attributes have changed? What do you think has given you the edge?
Would be very interesting to compare this to my previous answer, because I think
you've not heard it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I still think that one of my best attributes is team working and sort of working in a close team to try and together come to a common conclusion. And that certainly was part of the reason that I was able to make this transition and move into this new role, was working on a lot of sort of collaborative projects, even with third parties. So understanding what you can and can't say in front of someone from a third party, whilst also still working together to reach a common goal. That was quite important. And for me, still working in research and development, I think the curiosity really of always wanting to know more, wanting to learn and not sort of turning up with a preconceived idea of what's true, actually, okay, Len, let's design an experiment and work out what the answer could be. So that's still something that motivates me. There's still so much more that I don't know, and so much more that I will need to spend the time to research. So yeah, that keeps me going.
The team working and sort of being open to learning and having a curiosity still. What do you think has made you better as the years have gone by?
I think I've gained a certain amount of confidence. I think when I start something new and fresh, there's always the expectation that you know absolutely nothing, whether that's imposter syndrome or something in between. But it takes a bit of time for me to actually say, there's a reason people should be listening to what I have to say. So that's the thing. Yeah. So a couple of early successes at the beginning completely shifted like my sort of confidence in my own ability with this, of like, yeah, I'm fairly new around here, but we're still being successful. We're still getting the results that we want. We're still supporting the business in the way that they appreciate. So yeah, you're here to do the job and you're doing that job. So yeah, good on you and keep going.
Yeah, good. And that's such a great example of the benefits of age, really, that, you know, you pick up more confidence and so you are better equipped as time goes by. And no doubt as well, you've encountered various challenges and more difficult projects as the years have gone by, which, again, I think, you know, no one enjoys those situations. But once you come out the other side, then you're better equipped, aren't you? And you're better equipped for a more senior position and to manage others who maybe have not experienced that yet. So sometimes it doesn't feel like it. But, you know, if you're trying to get ahead in your career, I think that dealing with challenges as well as successes is absolutely imperative.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I said this like way back when I was still studying for my master's. I think it was during the interview process for this graduate role in Shell, telling a couple of scientists basically some in-depth methods that I was using for my master's project. And one of them asked, like, were you annoyed at having to use this piece of equipment? It was an absolute nightmare of like, you could work for many weeks on something and then one mistake and you were completely like set back to the very beginning again.
Yeah.
I said at the time I was so frustrated by it and it was really annoying that this was the only way that I could do this. But then looking back at it now, it's like that was the thing that made the project the challenge that it was, and it's so much more so much more of an achievement now having done it because it wasn't easy. You look at it at the time and you go, this is an absolute nightmare, and then you look back on it and go, yeah, that's what made it rewarding.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. So any changes in your routine? You know that I very much connect body, mind and business, and very much teach that there are many pillars of success, and that, you know, this vehicle of ours is the thing really that enables us to do all the things that we want to do. I just wondered if you've I know you were, when we spoke, you were a keen cricketer, climber, if I remember rightly. What sort of self-care routine do you have now? I mean, how do you keep fit, and what's your view on that old holistic approach to success and performance?
That's funny you should ask, because it's something that I've been trying to turn around pretty recently. I'm still very keen on rock climbing, cycling, and I'm trying to get back into running again. It was something that at the very start of the pandemic, I thought, you know what, we're going into lockdown, but I'm going to come out of lockdown fitter than I went in. And then as it dragged on and on and on, that motivation really did take a dive. And it was a lot harder for me to actually get out the door. So that's something that I'm trying to flip now. As I've got a bit further on in my career as well, there's a lot more demands on my time. So it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, no, but these meetings have gone on too long today, so I won't go out for a run this evening, or I'll take the tube home instead of cycling. So I'm really starting to try to say no, draw a line under this. I definitely need to get back a bit more. So one of the things that I was doing a lot when I was younger in my career was like looking at my week calendar and literally trying to find the spare time that I could fit a run in here, fit a cycle. And I didn't have any clear sort of structure or schedule to my training, but I knew that I needed to do a couple of runs a week and at least go out for one or two cycles. And I'm trying to get back into that mindset now of like finding the gaps where I can fit that run in or cycle to and from work. And that's counting towards my sort of movement target. And yeah, it's working again. It's sort of getting me back into that scheme of like, yep, I need to move somehow or other. I fit it in every time that I've been able to complete a run or something. That's a step closer to maintaining my fitness and not just giving up and taking the easy way kind of thing.
I mean, I think the easy way now would be the hard way longer term. That's what exactly. I was saying before. And one of the things that we teach, and in fact, we go into companies and teach this to their you know, leadership teams, is to actually do it the other way around and to slot in the self-care stuff. So to slot in 4 hours worth of exercise somewhere, and 168 hours in a week, you know, 4 hours should be found, even if it's sort of early in the morning, to put some time in for meditation, you know, and contemplation, and just in general, we call it the emotional gym, some mindset work. And then everything else obviously is going to happen anyway. Business never stops. But it's actually sort of fitting then the business around these non-negotiable slots and treating the self-care slots non-negotiable as you would a meeting with a colleague or something. And we find that that has a huge ROI actually in businesses, but we can talk about that some more. But I think from what you've said, that you've got to that sort of typical position where you're more senior now, you've got a wider remit, ever more pressure on your time, and things do get in the way, don't they? So there does come a time in people's career, and probably for you it's around about now, where like you have to make it doesn't happen on its own. We get busier and busier and busier, and we have to sort of make that very conscious shift to say, okay, well, I need to perform in my career, but unless my vehicle is working adequately, and in not the case of an electric vehicle, in the case of our body being the vehicle, we need to put our own mask on first, as it were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, yeah, it is very much like, this is the non-negotiable. I need to get out. Oh no, it's raining. That's the only way I'm going to get to work. I still have to cycle.
Exactly. Any final words of advice? You gave some advice to young people wanting to get into being, you know, a scientist, as we called it at the time. But any sort of more current advice at this point? There's more apprenticeships now, more apprenticeship programs. There's different types of degree programs, different internships. What are you seeing working at the moment for new young entrants into your field?
So I think going back to what I said earlier about the changing sort of training that people have before coming into a role such as mine, it's no longer sort of you're destined for a specific career because you've studied a specific topic. There is a lot more flexibility in the roles that you can do from any given degree or apprenticeship or however you sort of start on your career ladder. And especially with the shift that I've made in my own career, it was always something that I wanted to do, but at times felt like, oh, I've got this badge of being a chemist, so I should only be sort of working on chemistry topics, not engineering sort of thing. So that was certainly something that I am very proud that I've been able to do. And it just goes to show that just because you've studied something doesn't mean that you should always have to have a career in that topic. So that's definitely something that I'm wanting to promote a bit more, definitely. And also, yeah, this was sort of the perfect opportunity for me to do that all still whilst working in the same company. I think it would have I don't know whether this is actually true because it's not something that I've actually tested, but I would assume that it would have been more difficult for me to get a job in this same area in a different company without any of the experience that I now have. So when I did make the shift, if I was to look to move to a competitor, for example, and want to move into their e-mobility team, I would have probably found that more difficult. But making that switch within Shell means that I have this experience now. If I were to decide that I wanted to move to a different company, I already have that and I'm in a much better position.
It's a really, really good point, actually. And it demonstrates the benefit of being in a big company and also being in any type of company for a length of time, because part of the decision to appoint you into that new role would most definitely, as you said, have been due to some of those transferable skills that they knew that you already had. So you're a trusted pair of hands already. You wouldn't have had that if you'd have gone into another company. So you wouldn't have had, you would have had it, but you wouldn't, they wouldn't have known it as much. So it would have been a harder hire decision for them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's brilliant to see, you know, what you've done. I feel like, I don't know if you've ever seen that program, it's called Seven, and people get interviewed every 7 years. So it wasn't my intention at the time, but who knows? I may see you again when you're 42.
Exactly. Oh, God, no. That's terrifying, isn't it?
Well, it's so lovely to see you again. Thank you so much for spending the time, Mike.
Thanks very much for your time, Angela.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please do subscribe. I've never looked for sponsors and I don't intend to, but more subscribers will put us up the ranks and then more people will see it. And also, if you have something to share and you'd love to be a future guest, or there's someone that you would like to hear as a future guest, please do contact me. And in any event, I'd absolutely love to hear from you and get your feedback. Wishing you a great day and thanks for listening.